the second principle is start small and then make the least change for the greatest effect. So this is, again, applies to trying to conserve your energy. You're not going to continually be making grand changes to your system. You just want to make small incremental changes to see what happens, and continually observing, like the first one said. So you're just constantly observing to see what happens so that you're not wasting all of your energy or your resources on something that's actually not going to work in the end. And then the third, obviously, important in any production model is to obtain a yield. What we learned, which I guess is also contrary for those of you who went to the Mark Shepherd presentation, yields in the Cuban permaculture are theoretically unlimited. So food is obviously a yield, community is a yield, beauty is a yield, a recreational space, anything that really is providing for either people's basic needs or social needs or anything like that is theoretically a yield, which I really appreciate because I like that beauty is an integral part of the way you're designing. You want people to enjoy the space. You want people to be feel welcome in the space and want to pass time in it because that also is a community builder. And that's something that is also really emphasized in the Cuban permaculture model. Next, are we still here? Is stacking functions. So also I wanted to add that the permaculturalists in Cuba also really emphasize that any one of these principles can also be applied to people and communities. So for example, when you look at stacking functions, I'm just going to keep going and then I'll point out another example. So all elements in the design should serve multiple functions. All functions in the system should be served by multiple elements, meaning everything is integrated. You don't want just something that stands alone and only reinforces one goal. You want it to be kind of feeding into the whole system and making the most use. So if you have, for example, serving multiple functions and serve multiple elements. One good example I find is they do plantain circles in Cuba. So they do they dig a hole that's essentially 2 meters wide and 1 meter deep, and then they plant bananas around it, and then they plant lower plants so that don't necessarily need a lot of sunlight, so they're provided shade by the plantain trees, and they also make it so it's a compost pile in the very middle, so then they're kind of have a place to put all of their waste, and then it's also the roots are feeding into that system of decomposition and things like that. So it's a lot of things working at one time. It's not just a standalone plant kind of doing its own thing. If you're going to have a tree that provides a lot of shade, you should also plant a tree beneath it that requires a little sunlight and things like that. And then you also want to use vertical and horizontal space. And then that also ties into succession planning, which goes into the human element, is that if you are designing a system, you don't want it to just be one static point in time. You want to know how it's going to develop over time, and you also want to have a plan for who is going to take care of that system and what's going to happen with it as well. Oh, the next is maximize diversity, because diverse elements with diverse functions create resiliency. And that would also be applied to human communities. We had the theme of resilience last year, and when you look at our political institutions, they're not, I guess, using the example of Alberta, they're not necessarily resilient because it's really one overarching entity, which is our government tied in with oil and gas and our regulator. It's one entity that's basically making all of the decisions, which isn't resilient because when problems do arise, who is going to solve them if they all have one thought process and all have the same solutions to problems? So that's the same thing here. The more plants and the more things that are feeding into the system and also giving back to the system, the more resilient it'll be. And as well, when you look at disease and crops and things like that, the more plants that you have, the less likely you are to kind of lose a year if something goes wrong. All right, so these are the last ones. So that the
that one ties into the overarching goal, which is catch and store energy, cycle all resources through the system. The example would be the dry toilets. You're just trying to keep things within the system and recycle them through, so energy is constantly being reused. The next one ties into the recycling of resources, so use local, on-site, and biological resources. Always ask, what do you have now, rather than what ifs or possibilities. Produce no waste. I think that's a pretty universal permaculturalist slogan. Pollution is an unused resource. So things that can be composted or things that essentially can be thrown away can be used in your system. Relative location, create functional relationships between diverse elements in the system. Integrate, don't segregate. Law of return, whatever we take, we must return. Do not export more biomass than can be fixed within the solar budget. Maximize edge and value the marginal. That's something that it was really reinforced to be also encompassing human communities. So when you're building your system and you're, you know, taking into account social and political factors, you're also supposed to ask who is excluded from this and how can we get them involved. For example, the system that we ended up building, once it becomes productive, I think it probably would be by now, if Cuba is really fertile, has a year-long growing season. But anyways, they were looking at, they sell their food at discount to a local elementary school, and then also use that space as a learning tool for that school. So kids would come on, use it as a recreational space, and also as a tool for them to learn about agriculture and plants and food and things like that. And then they're also fed by what's being produced in that system at a very low cost, if not free. So the last one is design from patterns and be mindful of details. Observe and mimic patterns in nature. So you're not looking at creating some incredibly scientific, advanced design system all the time. You also want to look at what naturally happens in nature, what kind of systems exist, and how can you mimic that. All right. So that's all the permaculture principles. And now I just have a few pictures attached of examples that were in our system that we built. So here you can see some of the tires that I cut and some of the rum bottles that I laid. We had to do a lot of drinking to get all of these bottles. actually, these were...
Rule, actually. She just calls it translation.
Yeah.
Translating it from rum to...
Yeah, exactly.
The rum you drink, but you translate.
Exactly, yeah. More relaxed. anyways, so the tires and the bottles were both taken from a local garbage dump, I believe. I think we got a bottle, like, they were selling them, but it was one kook per, like, sack of bottles. So that's, I don't know, that's like $1.30 Canadian or something. Pretty cheap. Anyways, and it was not far away, so they just had to go and pick them up, essentially. Oh, and I have notes here.
What's the center?
So that was the teepee in the middle that we could plant climbers on for beans. I think it's karabuja, which is passion fruit. I'm getting a little slow with my names of vegetables and fruits, because there's a lot of them. but essentially that's an example of the stacking function. So you're making use of vertical and horizontal space. And yeah, the reason for that is for plants that naturally have to climb anyways. And then these are the raised garden beds that essentially I think would just be we were planting either small medicinal plants or vegetables. So you can see that. Also, here's the compost. They kind of just like along the property line, they just threw all of their waste on for years and years, I think. So it was just, we essentially just had to kind of dig it out and just throw and fill our beds with it. And another thing I forgot to say, our system was one hectare of land. So, and you also look at the different zones, which you'll see when I have the map included here, but that's what we were working with, was 1 hectare.
Much sand you've got there?
Those are rice husks. They Yeah, they're just used so you always cover between the beds so that the weeds don't really, they don't grow up. So we essentially had to kind of like take the first layer of grass and everything off and then lay them down. So just to keep them clean and make it easier for the gardeners. Most of the gardeners were about 85. So I guess that's another truth about Cuban agriculture is almost everybody. In Canada, I think the mean age is 60, and in Cuba, I think it might be a little bit older. So make it easier for them to get around. Here's another one. Even the fence was not safe from fulfilling multiple functions. So that's a really common thing in Cuban permaculture is to have vivacercas, which is a living fence. So another, we planted climbers. This is when I returned to the system, actually, 3 weeks after, because I did 3 weeks on the other side of the island and then went back on my way to the airport just to check it out. So you're planting climbing plants around the fence. And on the other side, the fence also completed a security function because they planted cactuses so that they were kind of worried about intruders. And I mean, if somebody really wanted to get in, obviously they could take a machete or a chainsaw or whatever and hack all the cactuses once they're fully grown. But that's kind of just a way that they would protect the system. Oh, also here is our lombricultura, which is a worm compost. So that's what we built right there, so that it would be close to a lot of the garden beds that were on the other side, so that it could be easily accessed. It's just a small one. They just, essentially, it was kind of an experiment. All right. And this is also 3 weeks later. So this is a use of classic design. The one is keyhole. So the idea is that you can always reach the middle from wherever you're standing, so you don't want to have anything wider than 1 meter. And then we also designed it after the pattern of a leaf. Cubans really love the kind of interesting designs in their system to know what it could look like from above. So this one was a leaf. We had another one that was a flower, things like that, that they really enjoy the classic designs for the creation of beauty and recreational space and kind of a piece of art because, I mean, art is also an undervalued resource. And essentially they want their systems to also be one grand, not only a productive system, but a grand art project to, you know, have culture present. I don't think I need to read that totally aloud. And this was our boss, Edith. And this is when I returned 3 weeks later as well, and it was already producing. Look how big that radish is. Mm-hmm. And she let me take home a handful of vegetables. Yeah, only 3 weeks later, so I took home beans and radishes and things like that.
Oh, not me to Canada.
Pardon me?
Not to Canada.
No. Yeah, no, back to my, to where I was staying. I was like, what is he saying? Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that was just my last. I wanted to include that picture of her. She's this little tiny lady that wasn't even 5 feet tall, and she was our boss and quite demanding, actually. She's kind of funny. So I always had to report back to her and help translate. She also spoke really quickly and with a really demanding tone. So sometimes I was like, what are you saying? I can't translate that. All right. And then I guess this was the biggest installation was the Punta de Venta, or the point of sail, which is if you were to walk forward, that would be where the highway was. So people could access it off the highway. This wasn't totally completed. They were going to continue working on it. And I'm sure it's done now. So we use ecological building techniques, using local resources such as palm leaves. And we also built this using adobe. So I personally made a lot of bricks by hand out of clay, calcium, straw, and water. And then you just form them and let them dry. We also did the rolling technique where you have a big stick, you wrap it in straw, and then roll it through kind of a more viscous mud, and then just put it in and let it dry like that. And we also did the kind of slapping technique where you just kind of put sticks in and then just huck really dense mud at it until it kind of fills the wall up. So every wall actually in our Punta de Venta had a different way of building it, because this was a kind of a first in Sancti Spiritus, was this ecological building. So they just wanted to know what would work best. The whole building was kind of an experiment. But actually one of the guys who was on the trip. He was 21, and he did the whole design start to finish, including laying the foundation. So you had to dig the trenches and the concrete underneath and things like that. Another interesting piece of this is that it has a cosecha de agua, or a rainwater harvesting system. So it catches rainwater off the back, and then back here, there's a sink attached where you can wash vegetables while you're selling them. This is where they would be selling the produce from. So back here, feeds into back here, and then it has a filtration system of sand and gravel underneath, and it goes underwater in a pipe to connect to one of the little ponds, because that's a really big thing in Cuba, is growing tilapia in your permaculture systems. So they have ponds with, I can't remember what they're called, the lily pads, I don't remember what the Spanish word is. Anyways, so they have those that are kind of feeding them and providing oxygen into the water, and then they have the tilapia. So you can kind of see the pond in the back with those stones there.
The kitchen in the Jasper Place High School feeds a lot of tilapia, so they actually have set up a permaculture system within, right in the city, right in Edmonton. And so tilapia is their other protein source.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is tilapia?
It's a type of fish.
Oh, okay.
Grows pretty
quickly. Okay.
Yeah. Another thing that's
and
really...
And their poop can be used again for the plants, right? So it's a nice system.